Welcome to the Net Effects Podcast, where Les Ottolenghi and Mark Bavasotto break down how the Fortune 500, the hottest startups, and the best VCs succeed through digital, social, and personal transformation. And now, here are your show hosts, Mark Bavasotto and Les Ottolenghi.
So, getting to Friendly's Johnny Rockets in 2018. Now, you said they haven't invested in technology since 2003. Mm-hmm. So when you got there, you started making investments in technology. And you think if that didn't happen and the pandemic struck, would there still be a Friendly's today?
It'd be a lot harder, for sure. So I will tell you that we had no capital. We didn't have a lot of money, but we kind of made a decision. And this is where I think a lot of CIOs miss it. You know, if you want to move your organization out of a commodity play, i.e. servers and moving to cloud and so forth, become a strategic asset to the business, one of the best ways you can do it is always focus on revenue production. And the systems you work on, for the most part, most of them should be producing revenue, especially the new projects and so forth. And that's what we did. So they kind of said, when I got there, there was an organization culture change. I go in and talk to the CFO and I go, are you yielding or are you pricing? And he goes to me, and yielding is you focus on how much money you make off the product. At the base of the product can change, you can have higher demand or whatever. And so I said, are you yielding or are you pricing? He looked at me and says, we price. Do you know how much it costs to reprint menus? And he goes, oh God, here we go. And so then a couple months later, I said, we need to get a delivery service in here. Oh, I don't know. They take a lot of money. You got to get it in. You know, by the way, you just don't want one. You want four, five, six. And what I was patterning after is exactly what we did in hotels. When I was putting in the OTA online travel agencies and those type guys in the early 2000s, Alamo and Wyndham and so forth, you don't want one. You want tons of them in here. And yes, they take a lot of money. You got to know how to handle that. And so, oh, I don't know. We got one in, got another one in. We got four of them in. And so we want to keep on going, but we never got that far. And so then the next thing is new CEO came in, great guy. George Michel, great guy. He said, he's an old school restaurant operator. You know, he's good, salt to the earth. We're going to go do this. And so he focused on a new menu. And the menu was good. And then he focused on just delivery, good service, good clean restaurants, good value product, i.e. good, you know, you pay $7 for breakfast, you get a good $7 breakfast. And he did that. So we started improving the bottom line of the company. And then with all the delivery kicked in, it turned out to be 20% of the revenue for the company at the time. And those two, that combination of those two things made Friendly's profitable for the first time in years. Then the pandemic hit. And we still had some cleanup to go do, but the pandemic hit and we went down 65%. Now, keep in mind, there are no drive-thrus. Maybe only a handful of them have drive-thrus, but no real drive-thrus. If you had a drive-thru last year, man, you were killing it. I mean, you're up 20% year over year, actually. So we went down 65%. And then my point of sale person came to me because she'd been hearing me kind of, you know, muffling under my head. We got to get these sites cleaned up and so forth. Just e-commerce 101. You go in there and say, why don't we have images here? Well, this write-up is terrible. And then I start saying, look at the analytics here, guys. You know, we got this category number one and it's not selling, but our biggest category we have hidden well deep into the site. We need to move it around and then start prioritizing what the order is of the product set. Real simple stuff. And, you know, make it easy for the customer to find the product. E-commerce 101. And she got miffed at it. So she said, we're just going to go do this. And I said, yep, just going to go do it. I got your back. If they ever say anything, I made the decision, kind of doing it away from marketing and the organization. We're going to go do it. So she spent the whole weekend and did it. And we put it in, cleaned up all the sites. We put it in and so forth. And you know something? The next week, she had a 10% pop in revenue. The point of sale admin, she's a great person, but she impacted the business by 10%. And then I start, you know, I'm a big believer in cross-functional teams. So the marketing guys are in on this thing and the accounting guys are all in on it and so forth. And I take their nose into the DoorDash sites and Grubhub and so forth. And I start saying, look at this. You know, I put my location in where I'm ordering from. And it just happened to be right next to a Friendly's restaurant. And you go, why am I down two pages? No one's going to buy this day and age. If you're down two pages, no one's, why is it? All right, get with their account rep. I want to know what it takes to get organic placement. Well, if you want placement, we're going to have to pay. No. I want organic. So tell me what it is. Okay. And then you go later on and go, holy cow, in the dessert subcategory, why is a sushi restaurant up the road here have better placement than we got? And we sell some of the best ice cream around. Right. And people start scratching their head. So over the next couple of weeks, next month, so we start working on organic placement. And then next thing during the summer, you go from being down 65% to only being down 35%. You fought your way back through good e-commerce and good third party. And then the dining room started opening up and we were only down 10%. And then the other interesting thing was we had some restaurants that were doing better without a dining room, just delivery only. It works. But you got to understand how the business model operates. You got the restaurant, dining room is what is known as a channel, right? And then you have the DoorDash and the Grubhub, you got all these different channels. And then we start saying, well, they take all this money. Yes, they do. So we're going to do something called channel management, right? Order, we're going to leverage these guys for all their marketing dollars. And then when it comes in, we're just going to do a little change to the point of sale that says an order came from Grubhub on the ticket. And then when they staple it to the bag or whatever, they say it's from Grubhub. You put a stuffed bag stuffer in there for our best prices, order through our mobile application. I don't pay the delivery services. So we try to start moving people out of those lower yielding channels and into the higher yielding channels. Simple, it's one-on-one type stuff. In hotels, it's called the best rate guarantee. You book directly with me and I'm going to give you the best price. So you start moving people out of these channels and over. And people know that they pay high dollars. You, the restaurant, pay high dollars for that, and they're willing to help you out to a degree. But you're never going to do away with the delivery services, but you want to always be trying to migrate them into your higher yielding channels. You want to focus on your product set that generates the highest product set. Oh, by the way, dairy sales during the summer. Nothing like a cold milkshake on a hot summer day. So there's seasonality in there. You talk to the operators and they know there's seasonality in their product set, right? So, but do you take it up 25 cents during the summer? Don't gouge the customer, but you got seasonality. We just go up a little bit higher because there's price elasticity. It will stop selling at a certain price, but you just go up 25 cents and that 25 cents drops to the bottom line. Or you start looking on things like if we were to have a better insulated cup, I could expand the delivery radius because I'll have a better product going out instead of 3 miles, go 5 miles out. And you talk to it's kind of an old school type organization was, oh no, you know how much those insulated cups cost? And you go, what? I got news for you. Why don't we just kind of tell the customer, be very transparent to the customer and have a really nice professional delivery packaging set that costs us 25 cents. And we pass that cost off to the customer delivery stuff. And you're starting to see that now in a lot of other places. If you want silverware, let us know. Take it out of there, cut their costs that way. I mean, at the end of the day, restaurants are a margin business. That is a tough business. It's a margin business.
When you look at things right now, so, I mean, obviously the restaurant industry in general is going through a big rough patch. And hopefully now as we push out of COVID, it gets a little better. So, what is, for all our restaurant fans out there and friends, what is one piece of advice that you'd give them right now to improve their margins? I don't know if you can answer that, but if there's something that they can do right now.
It's all in analytics, actually. It's all in analytics. It's just what we're talking about. It's predictive analytics. It's revenue management, yield management, and those type things. If I know I'm going to be selling 500 X, Y, and Z burgers, instead of going up a certain percentage, why not say like 1%? Why not go up 1.1%? on that burger, and that 1% drops to the bottom line. But you do the analytics that say, here's the demand forecast for that product set. And then you're watching it all the time. And you're watching on the various channels too. Grubhub, so let's take location 123, their Grubhub service. Old guys like me like to use Grubhub. The younger generation, like my daughter, will not touch Grubhub. They're like some local delivery service. So if you want the college students to do buy from restaurant 123, you got to get that local delivery service in there that all the college students like. And then you're delivering ice cream to them. And then while they're studying for exams and things of that nature, you got to get to that level of detail. So I'll tell you an interesting story. In restaurants, they do day parts, 4-hour segments of the day. And I said, that's not good enough. So we started going to 1-hour segments. And we found out real quickly that, you know, we don't sell anything in delivery until 6:30 p.m. And then it really picks up. Mm-hmm. And so it picks up 6:37, 7:30. We were shutting off delivery at 9:30. And it was like 9 to 9:30 was doing just as much as between 8 and 9. And you go, why are we shutting it off? Why don't we extend our hours? Turn off the dining room at 10. Yep, that I get. But you keep delivery open, my friend. You know, by the way, and the ops guys were going around, oh, we're selling all this food. I go, no, you're not. You are an ice cream delivery business. You want to see it? Here's all the metrics that says this is what it is. So the horizon for the restaurants really is personalization, knowing what Mark likes. And it is predictive analytics that I can say, get the right product to the right customer at the right time, at the right price point. It's data science 101. Can you go do that? Then you're going to be a hero. Most of these guys are under the build it and they will come type philosophy. I build a new burger out there, limited time offering. It's going to get people excited. They're going to come in and go do that. And I'll tell you, if you can do association analysis as to what is selling. So when you start building your LTOs, you say, here are the top 15 ingredients that's really sells in us. Sugar, ketchup, whatever. Make sure we got those in there, guys.
Data, right? I think that's a bit, you know, understanding your data.
Data to personalization of the customer is huge. You can do a lot of different things with the data. I mean, I'm pretty bullish on it. So when I came back from China, I was working consulting for companies. I developed churn models for what franchisees are not going to renew on you. 6% royalty is more important than selling an extra 10 burgers, to be honest with you. And which ones are going to fail on you? Go talk to those guys and go save them, and I'll improve your bottom line. And when I was running my Chinese outsourcing company, we were running a predictive model as to how many people we needed to hire. And at first, we kind of took a chance on it. And this isn't like go build a big system in R or whatever. This was an Excel spreadsheet that we were running these models on. And we run the model, and it worked. And we were able to start growing that company at 30% top line revenue. It's just being able to go do these type things. The sad thing is that in business, everyone's really comfortable with Excel. They're comfortable with the numbers coming out of accounting, and they think that's it. But then they kind of go in the future where it's like this. They don't really know that they got a predictive capability that can go get them there. And you go talk to them about it, and they go, well, is that number you just predicted, that correct? I go, no, it's not correct. Is there an upper control limit, lower control limit? Well, that does me no good. And I said, yeah, but you're here is only 30% right. My number is 80% right. And then even then, they still don't necessarily buy the capability because statistics was the course you did not want to take in university.
No, I don't know. So to be cognizant of your time here, quickly want to touch on personal transformation. And I just have one question really about that. Sure. And it's really around, you know, COVID has changed a lot for a lot of people. So, you know, how has COVID, you know, changed you as a husband, a father, and business leader?
As a husband, I think it's improved me, to be honest with you. You know, my wife works here, I work here, and sometimes when you're both talking at the same time to customers or employees and so forth, you kind of get on each other's nerves. You know, so we've worked our way through that. And I mean, I had associates, you know, Friendly's, for them to coexist. One of them, our policy was you are encouraged to work from home. Because sometimes you need to be in the office. You are encouraged to work from home. And he tried working from home 2 or 3 weeks, but he said best for his relationship that after the 2 or 3 weeks, just it's better if I'm away 8 hours of the day. I said, you got my full support. Have at it. So I think it's made me better on that point. Business, I'm not so sure I've improved. I may have read more, you know, still having personal conversations. I've been Zooming and teaming and just like we all have for years, but I've been doing that before. And I always try to make sure that my teams always turn on video. A lot of teams don't do that, but we would always turn on video. And then we share stories too. There is some camaraderie. Dogs come in and all that stuff is just, you know, all that stuff is just fun. I mean, I even had one person take a call from me and I laugh at her. My point is, hey, old lady. And she got on the thing, whatever. And she was in a robe at home. Whatever. And you don't say anything about it. Right. But I busted on her 2 or 3 weeks later. And she goes, yeah, I said, oh man, you know, I haven't even seen, it was like in a team meeting. She says, I haven't even seen people in robes that we're all laughing at each other and things like that. And she goes, you didn't see me in a robe. I said, oh yeah, I did. Blue and white. Okay. She goes, really? You know? So I don't know if it's really changed me. It's been a different, but I think you as a manager, you've got to be able to manage remote teams this day and age. I don't care if it's an outsourcing team in China or a different vendor that's the next town over or whatever. You've got to be able to go do it. And it's not all face-to-face. And I think the pandemic has put us in that situation. And it's also kind of shown that you can go do it also.
That's great. And, you know, obviously it's changed for a lot of people. And I know some people personally that's just like, it helped some people in the family situation. And it also hurt because all of a sudden they're pushing the same room with the same person. Right. And they're all trying to do different things and you're just not used to that. So it drives it two different ways. So I can understand that point. So now to make our final transition to what we call the rapid fire portion of our program, sure. Right? This is where we want to get to know a little bit more about Pete and the things that excite you. So the first answer that comes to your head, just blurt it out and, you know, we'll get going. So from the aspect of that, favorite actor or actress?
One that really impressed me, did not know her, Claire Foy.
Specific reason why?
She did, everyone knows she was the Queen in the Crown. She was the young queen. And I just thought it was a really convincing role. And since then, I've been, kind of thinking that she's pretty good. And, at that point, she's not one of the top name actresses and things like that, but just a really compelling portrayal. And I just have a lot of respect for that.
So favorite movie then?
Got several. So I think, of course, Hunt for Red October.
Nice.
Crimson Tide. All the Navy stuff, In Harm's Way with John Wayne, if you ever see that movie. My favorite binge was Queen's Gambit. I thought it was really good.
Yes, it was very good.
I'm a big documentary guy, and I think one of the best, there are a lot of great documentaries out there, but the one that I always go back to is In the Shadow of Motown. I just think that's a really great documentary.
Favorite song?
I'm an 80s rocker, and growing up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I'm an 80 rocker. So it's going to be Bon Jovi. It's going to be Benatar, who I think is just a rocker. And all those type folks, Led Zeppelin, there's not one that really stands out. It's just, I think they are just really good. And when I was in school, I really did not think they were great and they were good. But now that I'm much older, I really had an appreciation for their talent on being able to put all that together. Then, I thought it was just, a bunch of people playing and it was pretty good and so forth. Now you look at it and say, oh, that really was good. And the other great thing is, as you've seen on bumper stickers and things like that, it was great actually to see them live too during those days. So now they don't move as much this day and age. So,
favorite book.
My favorite book that I talk to quite a bit, besides, like I said, I read a lot of Harvard Business books. The one I like it really now, I'm really hot on it, and it's been a while actually, is A.G. Laffey on strategy. He's got a series of books out there. He used to be the CEO of P&G twice over, and he just really has a good strategy framework on strategy for companies and so forth. And everyone comes in, they got a strategy person, they come in and do a strategy and they give you a PowerPoint deck. And he says, that's all BS. It's a conversation. And hear all the different things and so forth. It's just a great framework. And you go do it, you're going to get really clear as to what you need to go do as an organization. So I'm really bullish on his work right now.
And then last question for you, the one piece of advice you would give our listeners to do in the next 6 months?
Take an idea and try it. Like I told you, the predictive analytics thing that I did in China on the people, that actually came from a book, Harvard Business School book. It was about, you know, you don't have all the money in the world. How do you invest in your labor to really get the most out of it and so forth? And I took that idea and I put some predictive analytics together. There are similar formulas in predictive analytics, and we did it and it worked. And that's just one of many examples. So at Wyndham, I read that this was in the mid-2000s, whatever. It was ITIL. That was a process guy from the Navy. ITIL, I read up on the framework and everything. I said, makes a lot of sense. We're going to go try it. In fact, I bet farm on it, actually. Never done it before. And you know something? It worked. So, you know, and so what I often find in folks is people are comfortable at doing their job, but they're not really comfortable about getting out and learning something new and trying it. It's just like pricing and yielding at friendlies. We can price. We probably still continue to be pricing. Let's try yielding. Let's do some things here. And you start challenging folks. Why this? Why that? This is what I'm seeing. You know something? It works. So, and they'd all, and you got to take it for a grain of salt. You know, you got to read something or do something. And you say, well, most of that doesn't really apply. But this one little nugget does apply. So let's just go try it a little bit. Calculate your risk. Figure out what it's going to be. Is it going to work? What were the returns? What was the learnings out of it? And just go try it. It could be a new set of code. It could be whatever it might be. And it's not applicable to the big guys. This could go down to the junior guys. I tell you this story. I had a young man at Wyndham that said, hey, you know, we're focused on revenue, generate revenue. IT is going to add value, rah, 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 rah. And so he came to me and says, you know, all the training courses that our franchisees take, I think the state will reimburse us for some of that stuff. I said, go try. And so he did one or two and it worked. And so then he started gathering it up. And so this was a young project manager, business analyst. He did it. State of New Jersey wrote us a couple million dollar check. Point of sale person saying, I'm going to go reorganize all this stuff. Go try. She didn't wait to be told. She just said, I want to go do this. So go try. You'll be surprised and you'll learn and you'll grow along the way.
Great advice. You know, I'm a big believer, especially being in the entrepreneur sector, huge believer. And, you know, if you have an idea, just go out and try it and kind of work your way through it.
You know,
always
just don't bank the farm. You know, don't bank the farm on it. Go try it. Go learn, whatever.
Right. Well, that was well said. And, you know, thank you for that. So that has been the Net Effects podcast, where we talk about leadership, digital, social, and personal transformation. I want to thank our guest today, Pete Gibson, for coming on and having a wonderful conversation. Thank you for all the time you took today. We really appreciate it. And we hope to have you back on the show again in the near future. So thank you again, Pete. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Mark.